Welcome to the Sum of It All Street Data Podcast. I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education. And this season, we're exploring the book Street Data, a Next Generation Model for Equity, Pedagogy, and School Transformation by Shane Safir and Jamila Dugan. Transcripts to our podcasts are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. This week, we're talking about Chapter 6, Build Coherence, Focus, Holism, and Well-Being.
Let's just dive right in, Audrey. Lots of talk about student voice, as we've been hearing throughout the book. And in this chapter, just right away, I had this thought about, like, how far are we willing to go with student voice? You know, because there seems to be different layers of how brave and how much control we want to give over. It's almost like I can hear the pushback now, not only in my own brain, but I'm thinking ahead of people I might share this with. Because people might say, but students need to learn how it will be in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. We can't just have them run in the system, right? They just can't make their own rules. But, you know, then I started thinking, like, what about this? Like, but maybe they're the ones who need to make the new rules in the real world. I don't know if you've noticed, Audrey, you probably have, but there's a few things that aren't going on so well out there in the real world, right?
Yeah, so true.
So like at the top of 122, as we're just getting into the chapter, there's just three great questions at the top of 122, Audrey. And I could see that those three questions could be applied to any county office, like we work in, a district, a school, or a team, or a committee. And here they are. First bullet is, what really matters to us here in this community right now? What is our equity imperative, our call to action that courageously names the racism and inequity inside our own buildings? Third question is, what is a vision and a set of assessment principles we can stand behind? I just thought this was a lovely encapsulation of three things that could really guide some people doing this work.
Yeah. You know, the second question is my favorite for today. Not that I don't like all of them, but for today, the second bullet about our equity imperative and this part that says our call to action that courageously names the racism and inequity in our buildings. Like the word courageously is just sitting with me. And I think our collective nature is to answer questions safely. And I get it. I've learned over time that if you point something out that's broken, you're often the first called upon to figure out how to fix it. And so it's way easier to name things and notice things that feel like safe or easy changes. But what is the courageous space of this? What are the things that might challenge us to really change, to notice and to work on? So that's sitting with me today as we start this episode. I'm curious, which of those questions stuck out most to you?
I think the first one, Audrey, I don't know that I've seen a question like this to guide thinking around something like this. And the question to remind our listeners is, what really matters to us here in this community right now? And you know, something that's reminded me of, Audrey, that you and I are engaged in working in, is we have this upcoming math summit that we're going to hold with math leaders from across San Diego County. And as you know, we're going to use intervention as a guiding theme to bring all these folks together. And it really is an example of what is important right now. And boy, the topic of intervention across our county around mathematics is happening in all kinds of ways. And I think it might be helpful to pull out a quote from the chapter to get into this discussion. And here it is. It says, "Those of us who teach children at the margins have been sold a bill of goods about the need to fill, fix, intervene, script, pace, and instruct our students into proficiency." This quote is so relevant in the sense that this discussion we're intending to get into in this upcoming math summit here in San Diego is it just seems so aligned. You know, we're going to have 60 to 70 math leaders across San Diego County. It's really exciting that we get into this conversation around intervention. And, you know, one of the important decisions that we made about the summit, Audrey, is really this idea of grounding the discussion in student voice. As you know, we're collecting video clips of students answering particular questions. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be kind of cool to share with our listeners the questions that we're going to ask students, and we're going to have video recordings, and we're going to really have this as part of our way of having people really analyze how do we want to think about intervention. So here are the questions for students. What is going well for you in math class right now? What is something you feel proud of? What is your biggest challenge or frustration in math? How have you ever been behind in math? What feelings came up? What happened as a result of being behind? What changes would you like to see in math class, and why do they matter to you? What would help you to feel you belong in math class? What could math teachers do to help you feel like you belong in math class? Audrey, I am so excited, to see how these questions could drive the focus of our educators at the summit.
Yeah, me too, 100%. And they're a result of this book, right? So the book is inspiring us to think differently about how we center student voices. And so some of these question stems were inspired by things we read in earlier chapters, and the idea to have student voice as the provocation for our conversations is one way that we're trying to think about inviting students into the space with us. And to be 100% transparent, I don't know how it's going to go. We haven't tried this before.
True.
But we know that we have to find more ways to hear students and listen to them deeply before we take off in another direction and make some other change or continue on the path that we're on. And I know I have a lot more to learn and understand. At every chapter we read, there are so many things I am making note of in so many different spaces and trying to rethink in others. But I do know that, we've talked many times about the difference between just stopping and restarting and throwing everything out and just starting anew and trying to take some small actions. And I know that some of this is just being willing to try and do something different. So before I go too far off tangent on that, it's been our practice to check out some reflection questions from each of these chapters to help us in our learning around the chapter and understanding of street data. And I'm hoping yours as well, as you're reading along and listening in. So I thought today we could start with question 2, which gets us into the meat of the chapter, and says, which of the pathways to coherence, developing a graduate profile or a performance-based assessment system, do you feel compelled most to work on? So I thought maybe we could start, Mark, by talking about each of these in terms of math, because I think that skews it a little bit or changes what maybe is in the text. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Our big purpose of reading this book is to take this really wonderful work and really apply to the math lens to it. So in that spirit, let's start with the graduate profile and really put this math lens to it. And right when I do that, Audrey, a question just pops right into my head is like, what would the graduate profile look like in the area of mathematics? Obviously, it's supposed to be across all content areas, but like specifically around mathematics, like at the end of high school. But also, could we think about it at the end of elementary school? So as I start trying to picture some of that and how it could push my thinking on some of the things that I'm already thinking about with what it could look like, I'm looking at the bottom of page 124. And there's three questions here that are pushing me a little bit. And here they are. What is the truest, most beautiful, and holistic portrait of a graduate you can imagine? And I'm going to add in mathematics. What is the truest, most beautiful way for students to demonstrate their knowledge you can imagine in mathematics? What is the truest, most beautiful anti-racist classroom you can imagine in mathematics? And especially those second two questions, Audrey, around most beautiful way for students in mathematics, the most beautiful anti-racist class. I mean, those things, by adding mathematics to them, boy, I'm just really like thinking the possibilities, right?
Yeah, I think there's just so much there that we could think about. And the point of this, right, is to gather all kinds of opinions around the answers to those questions, not just my opinion, but educators across our system, student voices, family voices, community member voices, and to hear what they say, because I don't think we're aligned. I read articles day after day and hear, you know, from parents and community members that we're not all thinking the same thing is important in the classroom. And so how do we have some conversations around that and really point to what it is that we're all working towards? We're all here to help students develop into their fullest, most wonderful beings. And so how do we do that together? And I think these questions start to get us at crafting and designing the situations and environments in our schools that can lend themselves to the opportunities for our students.
Yeah, I love how you brought the community piece in, Audrey, because I feel like there's always been this power differential with mathematics where, like, the school will help the community with mathematics versus the with piece with that. So thanks for bringing that up. You know, Audrey, the authors include just a wonderful section in this chapter called Voices from the Street. And it's about a 12th grade student, Danielle Martin, and how, as a student, she's actually part of the collaborative process for the graduate profile. And I just love this idea. I think it's interesting. You know, we talk a lot about empathy interviews, and you and I have done empathy interviews, and it's really become something that's gained traction for good reasons. But you know what's interesting? We still want to keep control over it. Mm-hmm. It still wants to be about, like, the adults figure out the questions, the adults ask the questions to the students. I'm thinking back to where we started the conversation today about how far are we willing to go with student voice? Like, are we really giving over control? Are we empowering them to be the data gatherers and the generators of questions? Or are we thinking that we've done enough by just pushing it far enough by having the empathy interviews? So recently, Audrey, you know that locally, our county office put on an equity conference. And one of the sessions that I attended actually had a student from San Marcos, and she was the presenter at the conference. I've never seen a student individually present at a conference like that before, not on a panel. She was just presenting on her own. And it was amazing. Her session was packed, if you can picture, just wall-to-wall people standing in the back. And what was interesting to me about it is she had constructed a question that she interviewed lots of her classmates around. And the question was, what do you want your teachers to know about you? Mm. And she had the students that were comfortable, there were video examples of their responses that they just sent to her. And then some students weren't comfortable being on camera. They just sent the audio response, or she just typed their response. So for 10 minutes, everyone listened to student voice that was out there around that question. Audrey, you could have heard a pin drop in that room. And you know what? It was wonderful and impactful and amazing. But you know, it also made me think about, how do we make this so it's not atypical? Mm. How do we make this so it's just how we do business? So it's not just an anomaly. So I walked away thinking that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Mark. You know, there's a lot to be said with that student leading that work too. And like you said in the book, Danielle Martin, and students hearing from students, we get different answers than we often do with the adults. So super interesting. I'm also thinking about specifically, like you're talking about, how the area of math fits into graduate profiles. And you know, we've helped a couple of different organizations locally work on developing their graduate profiles. And what I've noticed every single time is that math content knowledge is not the thing that comes up as something they want their graduates to have. Like, nobody says, I haven't seen it yet, at least, be able to recite the quadratic formula, or, you know, and yet, as educators, we spend lots and lots of time helping our students do that. And so the things that come up don't seem to be the content. They seem to be the practices over and over and over again. Like, we want students to be able to think and reason. We want students to be able to critique reasoning of others. We want them to apply math in situations where they see it, right? These are all the practices, the habits of being a mathematician. And it's not necessarily the content knowledge. So like, it's interesting to me, like we hear this again and again, and we listen to students and to communities, but what do we do with the information? How does that change what happens in our classrooms? How does that change the lessons we design, the courses we put together? It just makes me feel again, like we have to do something different if this is what communities and families and students are asking for.
Yeah, great point. And I think to that point, Audrey, I think that leads us nicely into the idea of performance tasks, what are we going to do differently, right, in mathematics? And regarding performance tasks, they're not new in mathematics. We've had things called performance tasks for decades. But, you know, what is the next push in this area of mathematics? I'm not sure over the last 10, 20 years, there's been huge, huge changes in how we develop performance tests. So like, what's the next frontier with this? Like, how do we take these? What's the next level of assessment that really ends up actualizing this notion of street data?
Yeah. So I think for all of us math educators listening, I think we have to take the author's advice on page 131 and says, give ourselves permission to shed everything we have been taught about assessment for the last 20 years. and I say that like both jokingly and seriously, like you hear performance assessment and automatically an image is conjured in your mind of something. Like you can see the question and you see what it looks like. And you already have all these notions and ideas attached to it. And I think what the authors are offering here is very different than what I've seen in any math class that I've been in. It's not a bubble test. It's not chapter tests. It's not the thing that you practice for the state assessment. It's not that. So maybe we should spend some time with what it is then.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. A really, really helpful chart. If you're going to zip to a page around any of this, I highly recommend page 135. The authors have set up a real beautiful table around four criteria for high quality performance assessment. And Audrey, as I was reading this, as I was just putting math in place of all, I didn't have to put in place, but just use a math lens as I thought about it. And I'm just going to share one takeaway quickly about the chart. The thing that I really took away is the last criteria, which is offers a learning experience in and of itself. I thought about some of my math performance tasks that I've given to students in the past in my classroom. And I think that many times they were more open-ended and there were more things for kids to engage in, but they still had the quality of a test. They were still a test that you finished and you were done. And I love this bullet. It says, incorporate moments to reflect, gather feedback, and revise. Kind of back to the grading conversation we've been having of, are students able to revise things? So that's one thing I'm thinking about with this idea of performance assessment.
I love that, Mark. You know, I tried something like this with adults just a year or so ago, and they were so uncomfortable with the idea of this. It needs a huge amount of vulnerability in this kind of assessment. You need the conditions that create a safe environment for people to truly share and have that learning moment that you're describing. But I would just, my first encouragement is try this on for size yourself. Yeah. Like the next time that you're thinking about your own learning journey, what have I learned this year as an educator? What have I actually accomplished? Could you use that chart that you pointed us to and have people think through those questions themselves and what that would look and sound like for them, for ourselves to name that learning? So good stuff there. Now, we are always doing this. I feel like we always are running out of time for a second question, but I think we should take just a few minutes to try to get a couple thoughts out on question four, which is another one we thought might be a good one to check about. This question says, what types of courage will it take for you and your community to move in this direction? And how will it strengthen your resolve and moral imperative to do so?
Great. Let's dive into that question, Audrey. I just want to like confirm what you had said earlier, that we really have to interrupt what we mean by assessment. Short story about me teaching fifth grade with this, Audrey. I had a scary thought one day. Is one of those days that you were doing review day. You remember review day?
Oh, yeah.
Like where you,
oh, yeah.
Where you like, I can squeeze in a day right before the test. So we're doing review day. And, you know, we got the whole class reviewing for the test tomorrow. And then I had this scary thought, Audrey. I stopped myself and I said, wait, am I teaching this unit for the test on Friday? Or am I teaching it for past Friday? In other words, like, if I gave this assessment 2 weeks in the future, would my students still know the material? And then, you know, here's the scary part. Then I thought about it. Wait a second. If they wouldn't know the material in 2 weeks, then what the heck am I doing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I really think this story seems to fit with our need to consider, like, we need a new way to measure what our students know in mathematics and a more authentic way for them to express their ideas around math concepts. But, like, you know, we talk about this moral imperative in the question, like, this is a really heavy lift. We're surrounded by tons of structures that keep us from changing it. Like, right? Because we have exit tickets, quizzes, unit tests, district mandated benchmarks, standardized tests. And in some ways, they're just a variation on the theme. They function the same way. And they haven't really led us to great improvements and strides around whatever, however you want to measure, like, our improvement in mathematics across California, or even across the country. So I think we have enough evidence that there needs to be a moral imperative for us to think about assessment differently.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, this book is about listening to students, and I think that's where we start, you know, but I want to mention that it's just a start. I was listening recently to one of the Street Data podcast episodes that Shane Safir and Asim Mumbi facilitate. And they had the co-author, Jamila Dugan on. And she said something that I think it's really important for us to remember. It doesn't end with listening. It begins, right? It begins with listening. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about you need courage to first listen, because when you listen, you might hear things that upset you. You just might. There are going to be things that you disagree with or you didn't know, and they hurt. They feel icky sometimes to hear what students say. Once you hear it, though, we have to do something with it. We have to do something different. And I think maybe, you know, that's the space that some of our folks in, like, maybe it's just to start listening. And then maybe if you're already listening, maybe we got to encourage us all to take the next step. The other thing that just really struck me in this portion of the chapter was a quote from page 133. And they said, failure was not an option. And then they asked, should failure ever be an option?
Wow.
And, like, I have got to say, my answer is no, it can't be. But I've sat there, like so many teachers, especially secondary teachers, when grade reports come out, and I've said the things to myself, but the student didn't show up, but they didn't try, they didn't give me anything. And then I recount all the things that I've done. I did this and this and this and this, and I gave them these chances and these extensions, and I called and I tried. And I think ultimately that is what we do in order to preserve our feelings. Like, I'm able to walk away and sleep at night thinking that I've done everything I can. But at the end of the day, our students are not broken. Mm-hmm. They're not the broken ones. The conditions, the designs of the lessons, the context, some of which I had control over as a teacher and some of which I didn't. But the things surrounding are the things that are broken that we have control to fix. And I think we have to keep going back to that as we think about what we're going to do next.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. Really great points. And the one piece I'm going to pull out of that is I think part of those stories we tell ourselves of why they're not doing this, doing this, doing this, is because I think that we're doing math to them. They're not part of the decisions. And so UDL comes to mind as I'm thinking about this, Universal Design for Learning, because one thing I'm taking away from this chapter is how our students could be much more part of the planning, the decision process about how they demonstrate what they know around mathematics as part of the assessment. So I'm wondering if they were more part of that decisions around how they demonstrate their learning, if there would be less of, like, they're not doing this, this, and this, because they're making many of the decisions. So I'm just thinking about that. We're just not tapping into the variability of our students. The brilliance they have may not be around taking a multiple choice test. So once we open things up and allow them to step in and be part of the decisions, I'm thinking things might be different.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, Audrey, we definitely are in need of wrapping up. So I have a couple thoughts that I'm thinking of here as we wrap up. There were more than one, there was more than one occasion in this chapter where our authors dropped hints about future chapters, and they definitely had me on the edge of my seat a couple times. And so they mentioned that you may be wondering, if students collect this type of powerful street data, what comes next? How can these data inform future actions on the part of the school community? And I said, yes, I want to know that. And they said, that's coming up later. And I said, oh, good. And then the other thing they mentioned was, they mentioned how performance assessments can provide an opportunity about street data cycles. Mm. That really sounds interesting to me as well, Audrey. So lots of good reasons to keep reading, right?
Absolutely. So much to look forward to and so much to keep learning as we go.
Agreed. Thanks for joining us for this episode. In our next episode, we will chat about Chapter 7, Make Learning Public, Valuing Teacher Voices. Until then, send us a tweet with the hashtag SumMathChat. That's hashtag SumMathChat with your questions and thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going there. Until then, best wishes on transforming education.